Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
You do not want to miss this episode about perinatal mood and anxiety disorders with a psychiatrist who is certified in perinatal mental health. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 241. Whether this is your first time listening or you've been listening before, I'm so glad you're spending some time with me today. So Dr. Stephanie Wagle is a mother, physician, author, motivational speaker, teacher, cancer survivor, marathon runner, and founder of Improve Medical Culture. She has a degree in psychology, biology, medicine, and she has over 17 years of experience working in the mental health field as a psychiatrist. In 2023, she decided to become certified in perinatal mental health, specifically advanced studies in perinatal psychopharmacology, which is the use of medication for pregnant people. She feels this is an area that is understudied, which is so true, and that pregnant women deserve an educated professional to provide correct diagnosis and treatment. Yes, amen to that. She really heavily advocates for expansion and integration of PMADS care, and PMADS are perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. We have a really informative conversation. You're going to learn a lot. We talk about what are perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. It's more than just postpartum depression, how common they are, risk factors, the most common conditions that she sees. This may surprise you. Spoiler alert, it's actually not postpartum depression. We also talk about when someone should seek help, because some level of sadness, anxiety is normal when you have a baby, but when do you know to seek help? Where should you get help from? When should you consider medication? We also chat about her approach to taking care of someone who is already on depression or anxiety medication prior to pregnancy, and then they become pregnant. What should you do about continuing or not continuing to take that medication? What do you do if you decide to stop your medication during pregnancy? What are your options for managing your mental health while off medication? Also, when should you restart medication postpartum if you are breastfeeding? Tons and tons of useful information. Oh, and we end with talking about the recently approved medication for postpartum depression. I'm going to mess this up. Zuranolone. I don't know where we come up with these medications, but this is the first FDA approved medication for postpartum depression. So we chat about how it works, how it's different than other medications. Really, really, really good information in this episode. Now, you know where else you can get some really great information? My birth plan class, Make a Birth Plan the Right Way. If you're having a baby, you need a birth plan, but that piece of paper, that ain't enough of a birth plan. I teach you the way to make a birth plan that is going to actually help you have the birth experience that you want. You can check out my free birth plan class. It's at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. It is highly, highly informative, useful. People love it. And there's a little goodie at the end of the class too. So do check that out. All right, let's get into the conversation with Dr. Wagle. Thank you so much, Dr. Is it Dr. Waggle? I should have asked you this before we started.
It is Dr. Waggle.
Oh, look at me. Right. I got it right. Dr. Waggle.
Like
yes.
Puppy dog's tail waggling. And then
there we go. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm really excited to have you talk about this really important topic.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah. So why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your work, and even if your family, if you like.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I live in Northern Virginia, and I've been in the D.C. area for, 14 years.
Okay.
But I keep moving further and further out into the suburbs as I grow up, I suppose. And I have two kids. I have a daughter, she's 4, and a son who's 19 months old.
Oh,
so
goodness.
It does get louder out in this house sometimes.
Yes, yes.
And I like distance running. I just did the Marine Corps Marathon.
That is impressive.
Yes, I'm not good at sprinting, but to continue to run for hours and hours, somehow I can do that.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, and let's see.
And then your practice. Tell us about your practice and your work.
Sure, yeah. So it's called Improve Life PLLC, which they made me put the PLLC at the end for Professional Limited Liability Corporation, but Improve Life. And so we've been around for about 7 years in the Northern Virginia area. And I specifically try to focus on the treatment for young women, adolescents. But we also see everybody because we have other providers here. Dr. Driscoll, she specializes in the males. And I specialize in ADHD. She doesn't specialize in ADHD. And then we have therapists, too. And then we have Mariam Azeem, who we couldn't function without. She's our office manager. And yeah, so we do ADHD testing, anxiety, depression, OCD, PTSD, just mental health in general. But I do specifically try to focus on adolescents and people of reproductive potential because I have the certification in prenatal psychopharmacology.
Well, why don't you tell us what that's about? What does that mean?
Yes. Yeah, so, as we were kind of discussing earlier, is there's not really too much that goes on in medical school or residency in regard to medications to be prescribed, specifically psychiatric ones, for people when they're pregnant, because I think it's a bit of a sticky situation. I have on my YouTube channel, it's called The Therapeutic Orphans. It's a video about how women, when they become pregnant, kind of just are told by either the pharmacist or their provider, just, you know, stop taking everything. Because healthcare workers in general have a greater sense of responsibility if something negative happens for something that they have done or prescribed, as opposed to something negative happening that they didn't prescribe. So let's say they prescribe something, there's a negative outcome. There's a lot of guilt and responsibility. But if they don't prescribe something and there's a negative outcome, like that connection really isn't there. So I think a lot of prescribers err on just not prescribing anything.
Sure.
Which actually does have detrimental effects.
Right.
So
right.
I wanted to fill that gap because somebody needs to be able to go to a doctor that's going to be willing to prescribe them something while they're pregnant. And my understanding is that there's only 2 or 3 other physicians in the entire state with this certification. And the fact that a lot of prescribers aren't really super educated in this creates a lot of confusion because then people get conflicting information. So I thought, let's get some real information out there and allow for pregnant people to be able to get some medication. So
Absolutely.
I got that certification about a year ago.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's awesome. It's pretty exciting for me.
And really important. And I don't think we even said you're a psychiatrist. I don't think we even said that. Yes. Yeah, so you're a psychiatrist. And tell us actually what training you go through to become a psychiatrist. I'm big on making sure that people get information from reliable, trustworthy sources because there's so much out there online, you know, in social media that anybody can sort of put up their whatever and say. So please tell us about what training you went through to become a psychiatrist.
Right. So long ago. So I got my undergraduate degree in psychology, and I graduated a year early because I was also pre-med and I had a writing minor. So I had like 24 credits. Well, it was a lot. Right. And they were like, oh, you could graduate early. And I'm like, oh, well, what do I do before I go to medical school since I'm graduating early? So that I got a master's degree in biology. And during this time, I worked as a psychometrist at Allegheny General Hospital. We did like Wisconsin card sort, like testing on people that had traumatic brain injuries and that sort of thing. And then I also worked at UPMC in the geriatric department for a while. And it was a lot of psychiatry because, you know, there's a lot of dementia and that sort of thing in the geriatric population. And then I went to medical school and I did some mental health things on top of going to medical school, because a lot of medical school like doesn't really get into too much psychiatry. But I worked for United Planet, and I worked at the United States Coast Guard, and I did a lot of mental health related things in addition to going to medical school. And then I did my internship, and then I did 2 years of psych residency. And then I opened up my own private practice because I didn't want to work for the man anymore.
There you go.
work for myself.
Right,
and that actually worked out pretty well. I won't digress too much, but I was actually diagnosed with cancer when I was in residency.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was very challenging. And so opening up a private practice allowed me the flexibility to go to doctor's appointments.
Right.
And take care of myself,
right,
which is really important for physicians in general, but especially in psychiatry, you need to have your own mental health taken care of so you can take care of other people's.
Well, I hope you're in remission now and everything as well.
Oh, yes, thank
well, good.
You. Yes,
good.
I am getting another MRI in 2 months, so hopefully that looks good.
Yes, there you go. And then how did you get interested in psychiatry? I'm just curious.
Well, I really like talking to people. In high school, I was voted most outgoing. And then in medical school, I was social chair every year. And I just really like to listen. I like to talk to people. And some of the specialties didn't allow me enough time to really talk to my patients. Like, I thought my ED like rotation was fun, but they were like 4 minutes per patient. And I'm like, but I have so many things I want to ask.
Right.
And so it's psychiatry, I get like an entire hour to talk to people.
Right.
And, you know, really, really get into the psyche and to analyze people. And I just think it's so super interesting.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Feeding your baby can be challenging. Breastfeeding can work beautifully, but for me, it didn't. I had to supplement with formula for both my girls, and it was so hard to find something that worked. That's why I wish I would have had Bobbi. Bobbi makes organic, European-style infant formulas using carefully sourced ingredients backed by proven science. Every single batch goes through over 2,000 safety and quality checks before it leaves their U.S. manufacturing facility. That level of rigor matters to me both as a mom and as an OBGYN. And Bobbi supports all feeding journeys, whether you're exclusively formula feeding, combo feeding, or just need a reliable backup. Bobbi meets parents where they are. Their full line is USDA Organic, EU Organic, Clean Label Project Purity Award winning, and Clean Label Project Certified Pesticide Free. If you want to feed with confidence, head to HiBobbi.com. That's HiBobbi.com to learn more about the formula trusted by parents and loved by babies. So let's get into perinatal mood disorders. Is it PMA? What does that stand for? What does that encompass?
Great question.
Yes.
Great question. So it's PMADS, which is perinatal mood and anxiety disorders.
Okay.
And I like to explain So I do talks for prescribers about mm-hmm. prescribing, and then I do talks to the general population.
Sure.
So if I'm just speaking for the general population.
Uh-huh. Which is what my audience is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where I'll go, mm-hmm. yes. So I usually say postpartum depression because most people in the general audience and the general population know what postpartum depression is.
Right.
But I actually prefer to use the term PMADS. And there's two reasons I think PMADS is more appropriate. Uh-huh. Again, PMADS is perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. PMADS encompasses a greater period of time. So postpartum depression, postpartum is just after birth for another year. Mm-hmm. But perinatal in the PMADS is from conception to 1 year after. So it gotcha. Encompasses a greater period of time.
Yeah.
Additionally, number two uh-huh. is that postpartum depression is just depression, whereas PMADS would be OCD, anxiety, PTSD, all sorts of other psychiatric issues. Yes. So PMADS has a greater time period, mm-hmm. and then it encompasses more symptoms. So I use postpartum depression because most people know, but I would prefer to use PMADS because it really takes into account, you know, more items and more people would be included into that category of PMADS.
Which is really important because it's not just postpartum, as you mentioned, and it's not just depression. Like anxiety comes up, birth trauma, things like that come up. So I really appreciate that you're, you know, talking about we need to expand it in a more encompassing way. It's great that we talk about postpartum depression, but we need to add the things to that to talk about as well.
That's right. You don't want to leave people out.
Exactly. Exactly. So how common are perinatal mood and anxiety disorders?
Well, for postpartum depression, so there's no statistic, I think, specifically on PMAP, uh-huh. but on postpartum depression, they estimate every one out of six, it's actually one out of 5 to 7, but I think one out of six makes more sense, uh-huh. women. And then actually, dads can get postpartum depression, huh. and the statistics are 1 out of 10 dads.
Really?
10% of dads. Yeah.
Oh, see, I did not know that. I did not know it was that common in dads.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. All right. All right. And then what are some risk factors for developing any of these conditions?
Right. So they're pretty what you would imagine. So risk factors would include if you have some sort of environmental stressors like lack of support from your family mm-hmm. or financial concerns, or you don't have childcare, or it's like an unexpected pregnancy mm-hmm. that you were not preparing for, mm-hmm. or there's abuse mm-hmm. going on, or job insecurity. So we have the environmental factors, you know, any of those stressors, those are going to be like negative points,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And then, of course, we have our genetic predisposition. So if you have a family history of postpartum depression, mm-hmm. or if you yourself has had some mental health challenges in the past, but sometimes it can come with no signs, no predictors, nothing. It could just be seemingly, you know, no cause. But so definitely risk factors would be your social support, financial support, yeah. Those sorts
gotcha,
of things.
Gotcha. Now, when you see folks that have these disorders or issues or concerns, do you mostly see depression? Do you see some anxiety? Do you see some PTSD? Like, what do you see in your practice?
Oh, well, I see it all, but I,
okay.
you know, I think it's if I had to guess, it's probably comparable with anxiety and depression.
Okay.
So we have this hormone, pregnenolone, which sort of functions in a way to be protective, helps anxiety. Uh-huh. And after birth, it decreases. And if you have something that's helping with anxiety and then that decreases, your anxiety is going to go up.
Right.
And I really see a lot of anxiety after women give birth. It could also be that they're not sleeping and mm-hmm. then they have this new life form
sure.
and then they have to adjust their entire life. But there's hormonal factors and environmental factors. So I would say anxiety is a lot more prevalent postpartum than maybe people might think.
Yeah, I agree too. I actually think I had my first daughter was born premature, 8 weeks premature. And looking back, I most definitely had anxiety because I was scared she was like something was going to happen to her right. when she came home to a level that wasn't, you know, it was excessive. So I can see that we don't talk about anxiety enough and like the social media pressure of having everything perfect and all of those things. I'm not entirely surprised that anxiety is really prevalent. Yeah. Now, some level of sadness I shouldn't say sadness, but maybe some level of your, especially if it's your first baby, some anxiety, some depression, some level of that may be normal during pregnancy and postpartum. When should someone suspect that this is a problem and that they need to seek help for it?
Okay, good question, because it could be confused with the baby blues, which is in an estimated 70% of postpartum moms, and that's 2 weeks. So if it's longer than 2 weeks, it's not baby blues. Also, if it's just being a little, you know, emotional, irritable, tearful, baby blues. If it's longer than 2 weeks, then you start thinking about depression. But if it becomes to the point where it is impeding your activities of daily living, like your blues is so severe that you cannot even shower or get out of bed, that's going to be something that you want to probably get some help for. Sure. And so you want to make sure that I think a big component is the other people in your life saying, you know, you're not acting like yourself. Mm-hmm. You seem different, because if you're going through this, you're probably not able to really recognize it as well as people on the outside. So if people are commenting to you that you just seem unusual or like you've been isolating, and people are like, well, I mean, if you just had a baby, it's not like you're going to go hang out or anything. Right. But, you know, when people start commenting, that's like a big clue that it's going to be more than just your typical baby blues.
Sure, sure. And then to follow up to that, where should people seek help? Like, should they go to a psychiatrist right away? Should they start with a therapist? Like, what are things that, where should they go to look for help?
Excellent question. So the screening, as recommended, so the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends when the baby comes in, you actually hand the parents the screening form at the first visit, and then 2 months, and then I think 6 months. I could say that doesn't happen a lot. And then OBs are supposed to provide like the scale. It's either Edinburgh, or if you're from Scotland, Edinburgh scale to moms at some point throughout the pregnancy. So the OBs and the pediatricians are supposed to be doing the initial screening. And then if it comes back positive, or even if it's negative, but the OB or pediatrician just gets the sense that there really is something that needs to be looked into, they should refer to a psychiatrist. But then, like I was saying earlier, is that not all psychiatrists are well-versed, and a lot are just like, I'm actually just not going to prescribe anything. Right. I'm a little too afraid of what could potentially happen. Right. So in a perfect and ideal world, you'd want to refer them to a reproductive psychiatrist. But like, there just aren't very many of those at all. So you could get them in presumably with a therapist much quicker. However, if it's an emergency, you would definitely want to refer to, I mean, I hate to say the ER, but if they check that they're having suicidal thoughts on the scale, you know, an emergency is an emergency. You got it. Actually, so I will digress briefly to describe four levels of mental health care. So the first is your basic standard outpatient, that'd be a therapist, psychiatrist, then an office. And then up from there, if things are more severe, there's intensive outpatient. And that's where patients get like 3 to 5 days for a couple hours of therapy, group therapy. They're in a program. If it's something going on like withdrawal or drug abuse or something where you need to be medically monitored and you want to have a nurse and vital signs, that would be a partial hospitalization program where you're pretty much in there all day, every day, but you do go home at night to sleep. And then if it's an emergency where let's say you're doing the screening and they say that they're having suicidal thoughts or having thoughts about harming others that they think that they might act on, or if they are so disorganized that they cannot take care of themselves, like they don't remember where they live,
right.
That would be an inpatient hospitalization, and that's all day, all night.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to be clear that there's different levels based on
that's
severity.
Important. Right.
So if you're screening and somebody seems to have some mild depression, I would try to get them in. There's postpartum support international.
Okay.
And then there's like subcategories. There's like different states, like postpartum support Virginia. You can type in like where you live, and there's actually a whole bunch of like therapists that have the certification. And so if you're screening and it seems like there's depression, you could refer to one of them. I would make sure that you're referring to somebody that has some training, because you don't want them to get conflicting information, because then they'll be distrustful of healthcare providers.
Right.
But if it's something serious, then, you know, you got to get to one of those other levels of care that I just spoke about.
Gotcha. Okay. So I want to back up for a minute and talk about people, or not back up, switch topics maybe for a minute, and talk about people who are on medication before they get pregnant, either for depression or anxiety, and then become pregnant. What is your discussion or conversation about staying on medication versus coming off medication? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is kind of funny, because I'll get calls from my colleagues, like my other friends who are psychiatrists, and they'll be like, "Hey, Stephanie, I have a patient on da 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 da, and then she just told me she's pregnant. Oh my goodness!" And I'm like, "Well, calm down." So my general philosophy, and again, this is not medical advice, because everybody's different.
Right.
And so, like, just because this is what would be applicable to most people doesn't mean that the average listener, it's going to apply exactly.
Right.
But the general philosophy that I have is that if they're on a psychiatric medication that is working, I continue it, except Depakote. All the other ones, which is valproic acid.
Right.
I don't prescribe that to people of reproductive potential anyway. So if they're on that, it was some other doctor that did that. But all the other medications, if they're working, don't mess with it.
Okay.
One question I get a lot from other prescribers is, should I decrease XYZ medication? And the answer is no. And the reason is because if you decrease their medication, they're still going to be exposed to the medication, but now additionally, they're going to potentially be exposed to uncontrolled mental illness.
Right.
And I'm trying very hard not to go off on tangents, but again, briefly, I would like to point out that uncontrolled mental illness in the pregnant person, and I'm not going to get too sciencey, I swear, has epigenetic effects on the unborn child, meaning you can turn on and off DNA. So let me just put it in terms that if you are not controlling your mental health, it actually negatively affects the baby. So if you think like, oh, you know what, I'm just going to suffer through this depressive episode because I don't want my baby to be exposed to the medication.
Right.
Your baby is actually going to potentially have some negative outcomes from your suffering as well. But I'm going to get back on
track.
Thank you
for saying that. That is so, so important, because I think people actually, and they don't, they mean well, they think they're doing the right thing by coming off of medication because they're, you know, protecting their baby,
right,
but not realizing that so much about the baby's health is dependent on the mom's health. So it's just really important.
Correct.
So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And I could go out on the epigenetics, but I won't. But suffice it to say, when I get these calls from other prescribers, my patient is on this medication, I found out they're pregnant, do I decrease it? Do I stop? And if it's Depakote, that's different.
Sure.
But any other psych med, typically I would say no, because if you decrease it, they're potentially exposed to untreated mental illness and they're still being exposed to the medication.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then, What do you do if someone decides, and I should back up and say, obviously you'll have a discussion with your doctor about any potential risk for the baby. Like, we're not just going to, and there are actually very few risks for psychiatric medicines that impact the baby. I don't know if you want to talk about that as well. Any things to be on the lookout for, or, you know, people can just talk to their OB about that. I know with SSRIs, like, are there any in particular that you say, maybe switch to a different one, or do you just say stay the course for what you're on?
Good question. I get this all the time. Mm-hmm. So in general, except for Depakote, the psychiatric medication that's working, just keep it the same. Okay. Now, there's talk that Paxil, there are studies that Paxil could have negative. Okay, you know, if this is really getting into like specific case-by-case things. Mm-hmm. If the Paxil's the first thing they ever tried, then maybe you could switch to like Zoloft or, you know. Mm-hmm. But it depends on how many other medications they tried. So if they are already on Zoloft and Prozac and then Paxil was the one that worked, then you can keep Paxil on. But if Paxil is the first thing, you could potentially try them on Zoloft. And then I don't just tell my patients, all right, just keep on. I have this big, lengthy conversation, mm-hmm. and I feel bad because I go into like studies. And
sure.
They're probably like Dr. Waggle. Like, I feel like I'm in school again, but I'll go into studies because I need them to make an informed decision.
Absolutely.
And I'll say, you know, this, okay, for example, there have been studies that have shown that the SSRIs can cause, increase like length and duration of crying in newborn babies. Mm-hmm. And then I have to say, like, is the potential that your baby's going to cry more than most babies going to be enough for you to stop it?
Right.
And that sort of thing. But I'll go through the studies and I'll say, this one found this. Is this a deal breaker for you? That sort of thing. And then I also introduce them to some apps like Mommy Meds and things like that. And I do like to
you
explain
said mommy meds?
Mommy Meds.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a good one. MGH Women's Center for Mental Health has like my fave resources. When I continue a pregnant woman on a medication, I go over studies. I give them resources like the apps. And these are apps created by professionals,
sure.
not like
right.
social media
right,
influencers
right, right,
or
right.
something. And then I give them the resources like MGH's website. And then the fourth thing I do, which is not required, and I understand that pregnant people are just so busy and overwhelmed, they probably don't have time, but I ask them to enroll in studies because it's not ethical to put pregnant women into studies about different medications. But if you're already pregnant and taking the medication, that's how scientists are going to gather the data for future discovery.
Right, right.
So I say, you know, I know you're busy and obviously you're having mental health issues, so I don't want too much on your
sure.
plate. But if you want to sign up
right.
for these studies, so that's the fourth thing that I do, but that one isn't really required.
Got it.
But it is required that you have to listen to me
talk about all the information. Yes. And which is important. People should make decisions from being informed, and you want them to be informed, which is great.
Exactly.
So then if someone decides to stop their medication with them, which I'm sure some people do, obviously.
And I don't force people to continue
right,
either.
Right.
Not like-
yeah, exactly. Obviously you give them those resources that that you talked about. And I presume maybe therapy is also another.
Oh
option
yeah. I'm not just like, here's a pill.
Right.
If in most cases, especially because it's, even more sensitive, even more serious of a matter when you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever said to a pregnant person on meds, you don't need therapy, because there's so many life changes
sure.
coming up and you need support.
Right.
So I'm like 99.999% of the time, I also recommend therapy. I just wanted to clarify
yep.
that.
Yep. Gotcha.
Do continue.
Gotcha. Thank you. So then if someone decides to stop, when do you recommend that they restart their medicine after they have the baby, particularly if they're breastfeeding?
This is one of those things that I cannot generalize
mm-hmm.
because this is a super case by case basis.
Okay.
So especially because the concentrations of different psychiatric medications are excreted to different percentages in breast milk. And just to throw like an example out there, if the mom has ADHD, and she's on something like Adderall, that has a higher excretion into the breast milk than something like Ritalin, which is a methylphenidate that has a lower excretion. So I would have to actually see what medication they're on. But if I have to generalize, most of the time it is because of the benefits of breastfeeding. And again, I know I could have like a whole nother topic about like breastfeeding, but it is thought that the benefits of breastfeeding outweigh the exposure to the medication.
Gotcha.
Now for things like benzodiazepines, which is like Xanax, and Ativan, those Clonopin, those types of things, you will probably not find a doctor that's like, yeah, you could breastfeed and take them. Except for me. If you're checking in with me, if I've analyzed the whole situation, if your anxiety is so bad, if you're having panic attacks, then I will say, okay, you can take this benzodiazepine and breastfeed as long as you're checking in with me.
But you
want to make sure that you watch there's two things. The baby. If the baby is like somnolent and like super sleepy and lethargic, like then you know that the amount that is being excreted is having an effect on the baby. So you have to pay attention to the cues from the baby. The other thing is that I tell women that take benzodiazepines while breastfeeding to watch out for is falling. Like, it's what if you get knocked out? Like, benzos really make you like, you know, like, and you don't want to be breastfeeding and then you take alprazolam and then you just like fall asleep holding your baby. So if you're going to do that, you're going to need support from your partner to really keep an eye on you to make sure that you're not just like passing out in a chair. But then you also want to observe the baby. So the medication, when to start taking it, in terms of breastfeeding is very medication and patient specific. So unfortunately I don't have a all encompassing answer for you. On that.
I guess I'm thinking more like Zoloft, Effexor, those kinds of medicines. We tend to restart those pretty quickly.
You can breastfeed on those.
Okay. Well, speaking of medications postpartum, let's talk about the new postpartum medicine for depression. I don't even know how you say it.
Zuranolone.
Okay.
Whenever I talk to people in the general population, I just call it Zoo because I feel like
I don't know how they come up with the names for these medicines.
I think that they just have a random letter generator.
So tell us about this medicine. How is it different than other medicines for depression, or like why specific for postpartum?
So, you know, it's the year 2023 and this is the first year where there's an FDA approved medication for postpartum. All the medications that we've talked about so far, like the SSRIs, like Prozac, those are used for postpartum depression. They're used for depression in general, but they're not specifically FDA approved for postpartum depression. Now, there was another medication that was approved for postpartum depression earlier called Brexanolone. However, it's IV infusion over 60 hours. You have to be in the hospital and it costs $30,000. So it's really not feasible
No.
I guess celebrities.
Right.
So that really wasn't super practical. So they were able to take that concept and put it in a pill. Thankfully. And now that is what is approved. So, it works a little, it's not an SSRI. It works similarly to a benzodiazepine. And as such, it's going to be a controlled substance. It does technically have some potential for addiction, just like the benzodiazepines like Xanax do. I'll let you ask specific questions
about it. I didn't realize that it was similar to that class of medications. So who's a good candidate for it? Like, should this be like a first line trial, or who is it appropriate for?
So I would surmise most of the people that are going to be taking it, and I actually have not prescribed it yet, mm-hmm. because I'm not sure it, last I checked, it was not out on the market. Mm-hmm. But once it's there, I will prescribe it to people who are not having success on your standard regular antidepressant.
Gotcha.
And you certainly can take it on top of your regular antidepressant, because one of the studies was looking at the medication alone versus the medication and other antidepressants. Okay. So they've already studied people on antidepressants taking it. I got a lot to say about it, but I'll...
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Please. Go ahead. Tell us what else.
Well, I'm super excited about it, but I also don't... So, okay. I don't know if I did legal disclaimers. No one's paying me to... This is just my opinions about it.
Yep.
I'm not like, you know, got stock in Zuranolone or anything. It's just super promising. But it is... The studies were conducted by the manufacturers, so I just say, you know, keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're looking at a study, you want to see, like, what the motivation. So I, as excited as I am about this medication, I'm not willing to commit 100% that it's going to be fantastic.
Right.
'Cause, you know, like, people can be biased when reporting things. How now, with that said, there are so many great things about this medication. Allegedly.
Okay.
We'll find out soon.
Right.
You only have to take it for 2 weeks. So,
what?
You know.
Really?
Isn't that wild? Yes. Yes. And so people get really frustrated about antidepressants.
Right.
It's like it'll start working in 6 to 8 weeks.
Right.
And you have to take it for a year or two.
Right.
But Zuranolone starts working in 3 days and you only have to take it for 2 weeks, which is... In a psychiatric medication, it's just mind-blowing.
Right.
That's why I was so excited to say this, but I was like, oh, disclaimer.
Yeah, right,
you know.
Right.
But if it works that way,
that's
really great. And so let's see. I don't want to get too science-y, but it, like I said, it works on... the same kind of ways that the benzos do, uh-huh. on the GABA-A receptors,
okay.
but it has an additional mechanism of action that your typical benzo, like Xanax, and it just has an extra way of working that those benzodiazepines don't have.
Okay, well, I'm excited to see then as it comes out and it's more available. I did not know that people only had to take it for 2 weeks, so that could be a game changer, seriously. yeah. Okay. So as we kind of get towards the end, are there any myths or, like, you know, things you wish people really knew about treating psychiatric illnesses in pregnancy or postpartum?
Yeah. There's lots of myths out there. So I think the first thing, whenever I talk about, mental health treatment for pregnant persons, the first things that I start talking about is how common it is to decrease the stigma and make people feel more comfortable because, well, in my life, I'm obviously constantly talking about mental health.
Right.
And then I'm like, you know, I just see people talking about getting mental health treatment, but that's not the case for all communities and all families.
Mm-hmm.
Some families, it's like taboo.
Right.
You don't talk about
right.
it. And people think that they're the only person who's having this issue. And so I start out by saying 1 in every 5 to 7 women and even 1 in every 10 men. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, oh, well, I feel better
yes.
that I'm not the only person
right.
going through this.
Right.
And so that's the first myth, is that it's rare. It certainly is not rare. The second thing, and this is one of the most impactful and most important things
mm-hmm.
that I like to emphasize and I always make sure to bring up when I'm speaking to a group of pregnant persons, is I say, well, I explain I don't like to use the word crazy. However, again, when I'm talking to the general population, I do use that term because people know.
Right.
I say, you're not crazy if you're having unwanted thoughts. a lot of moms, because again, that hormone that I mentioned earlier that decreases after pregnancy that is protective for anxiety, it goes out the window and then you have anxiety. And along with anxiety, you can have unwanted thoughts and they're intrusive a lot of the times. And I will do a trigger warning for anybody right now. The unwanted thoughts are typically pretty horrific. Like, they wouldn't be unwanted if they were like thoughts about rainbows and butterflies, right? So the unwanted thoughts by definition would be like, what if I drove my car off the road or dropped the baby? And that's why I said the trigger warning. And so when moms start having these thoughts, they worry that they're going, quote, crazy. And then they're worried that if they tell anybody, they will be committed to a hospital. And I have to explain that not only are you not crazy, but this is actually very common after giving birth because you're just like worried about everything. And so the differentiating factor between this being something that is anxiety versus this being something that's an emergency that you would need to go to the inpatient hospitalization is, are you okay with the thought? And I'm going to use, we're going to do just two definitions. One is egosyntonic. And that is that these thoughts, like, I'm just going to drive my car off the road, they don't bother you. And if you're starting to think that it's a good idea, oh, driving my car off the road, that sounds like a good idea, I'm not bothered, that is more of a psychotic psychosis type picture. And that is an emergency. So if the they wouldn't really be unwanted thoughts if you're starting to want them, and in that cases it's typically other people that are reporting to me, my wife is starting to think that this is a good idea, or the baby is a demon and she's actually believing that this is the case. So that is an emergency. That's exceedingly rare, although if that is something that you're going through, there's medications like for that, but it is an emergency. Now, on the other hand, is the thing that I see all the time, super common, is ego dystonic, meaning the thoughts are bothering mom. Mom would love to get rid of the thoughts. She doesn't think driving off the road is a good idea. In fact, she's terrified of it. Those are ego dystonic thoughts. Those are not an immediate emergency. However, it would be nice if we could control those. Those are actually quite common, and those could be from anxiety or an OCD type picture. And then people were like, oh, I'm so glad I can talk about it and not fear that you're going to commit me to a hospital. And so many people are like, oh man, that's such a relief.
You are going to save a lot of people by saying that, because I'm sure somebody is hearing
it. I thought I was crazy.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's really important. So then my final questions, and I ask all of my expert guests this, what is the most frustrating part of your work?
That's funny. It's a toss up between, I'm not blaming the pharmacists or anybody that works at the pharmacy. I'm blaming like corporate, because the pharmacies are so overworked. I read an article that there was a pharmacist who fills on average one prescription every minute. And so they're so overworked. But one of the things that really burns my biscuits is when the pharmacy loses my prescriptions. I really get very agitated. To the point, I have actually started screenshotting my orders and sending them to the patients to prove I sent it in. Here's the time, the date. I swear I sent it. But again, if you're filling 100 prescriptions in an hour or whatever is going on at the pharmacy, you're going to lose stuff. So I don't blame the pharmacist. They're very overworked. But then it just makes things very difficult for me when my prescriptions just disappear.
So then the patient has to wait, and it's just like a frustrating thing. I totally get it. And then on the flip side, what's the most rewarding part of your work?
I love whenever a patient says, I feel that I return to my normal self. I'm back to the way I was. I'm my normal self again. I'm just like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what is your favorite piece of advice that you would give to an expectant mother or parents?
it's to make sure you have a good support system, and don't hesitate to take care of yourself. And if anything convinces you to take care of yourself, it would be the epigenetic factors that I talked about earlier. Basically, if you, like, let's say you won't take care of yourself for yourself, take care of yourself for your child, because uncontrolled mental illness or issues going on with you actually does affect the turning on and off of DNA in your baby. So if you're not going to take care of yourself for yourself, take care of yourself for your child's genetics.
Excellent advice. Excellent advice. So where can people find you?
Well, I am in Reston. Well, they call it the McTaco Hut because there's a Taco Bell, McDonald's, and Pizza Hut. The Wheeling Reston Metro stop, that's where my office is. Okay. But I do virtual, so as long as you're in Virginia, you could just find me at www.improvelifepllc.com.
Okay.
And I would love it if people found me on YouTube because I put a lot of work into my videos.
Well, where are you on YouTube? Tell us where you are on YouTube.
So it's Improve Life PLLC on YouTube. And then there on our website, there is a link to all the social medias. My professional Instagram is Improve Medical Culture. That one is focused on my mission to make the culture of medicine not so toxic for med students and residents.
Oh, cool.
They really get abused a lot. There's a I have 10,000 followers on there. I'm proud of that.
Awesome.
But the clinic has an Instagram too, and that's Improve Life PLLC. P is in Paul, L is in Lion, L is in Lion, C is in Cousin.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we will link all of that in our show notes. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to come on to the podcast. This was really informative. I know I learned a lot, and I know the people listening learned a lot, and I know you have helped someone with this information today.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you, Dr. Nicole. It was super fun. I love talking about this type of stuff.
Wasn't that a great conversation? This is so important. There just aren't that many perinatal psychiatrists out there. So I'm really glad that she was able to come on and share her experience. Now, you know, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, which are my top takeaways from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's Notes from my conversation with Dr. Waggle. One, I do want to plug Postpartum Support International. That website has a lot of resources for you. You can put in your zip code and get connected with providers in your area who are actually interested in doing reproductive mental health. So Postpartum Support International, that website is www.postpartum.net. So do check that out if you need any resources. Second thing I want to talk about is normalizing those unwanted thoughts. I thought that was such a really important thing to mention, that we all have unwanted thoughts. It doesn't make us bad people. It doesn't make us abnormal. It just makes us human. And it's how we manage those thoughts, how we deal with those thoughts. That is what's going to set us up for success. But it is completely normal to have unwanted thoughts. It's just a part of being human. The next thing I want to talk about is how the most important part of a healthy baby is a healthy mom. She mentioned that she actually prefers to keep patients on their medication if they were taking medication for anxiety or depression, as long as they know the risk. Because if you don't take care of yourself, then how are you going to be able to take care of a baby? Okay. So really the most important piece, and this is something that I believe we miss so much in our society. We focus so much on the baby without realizing the first step for that baby to be healthy is to have a healthy mom. So take care of yourself, take care of the medications, take the things that you need to take in order to be the best, healthiest version of you. And the final thing I want to talk about is, since we recorded this episode, there was an article in JAMA, the Journal of American Medical Association, big journal, kind of, it was like a research letter maybe, or opinion letter. Anyway, it expressed some concerns about this new depression medication. And I'll say back up just a little bit. Studies in pregnant women or postpartum women and breastfeeding are really, really difficult. It can be hard to get people to enroll in studies. I mean, let's be honest, who wants to sign up to be in a study while you're pregnant? That may be concerning for you, or maybe not, but for a lot of people, it's a natural concern, right? So I can see how it's challenging, or you can understand how it's challenging to study any medication in pregnancy. But with this particular depression medication, when they did the studies, you couldn't breastfeed. You only take the medication for a short period of time. I believe it's 2 weeks, but you can't breastfeed during that time. They required that people were on contraception during the study. And then the final thing that was really like, raising red flags about whether or not this medication is as great as it was promised to be, is that they compared the medication to doing nothing for postpartum depression, which is not the standard of care. If somebody has postpartum depression, then we're going to treat that with medication. Okay, that would be the standard of care. So what they really should have done is, instead of comparing this new medicine to not doing anything, they should have compared it to not doing anything and to a group who were receiving medication for depression. Like all three groups, or if you're going to have two groups, then they should be the medication, the new medication, and then the standard of care for regular postpartum depression. You should not have compared it to not getting anything, because that's not a fair comparison. So just keep that in mind if that medication is ever brought up, or if you thought about pursuing or interested in that medication, just so you know. Okay, so there you have it. Please share this podcast with a friend. I so appreciate your help in reaching and serving as many pregnant folks as possible. And when you share, it helps me and it helps them. So share this podcast with a friend. Also, subscribe to the podcast and Apple Podcast or wherever you're listening to me right now. Subscribing makes sure that you never, never, ever miss an episode. And if you subscribe in Apple Podcast, do leave a review there. I appreciate it. A 5-star review if you like the podcast. Let me know what you think about the show. Also, come let me know what you think about the show on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. My DMs are open. If you want to come talk to me, I'm there. Come check me out there. So that is it for this episode. Do come on back next week. And remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.